Walter and Bessie Billingrout first opened their opulent gardens to the public in 1932, and they built their 10,000 square foot mansion in the heart of their 65 acre estate in 1935. Billingrout made his fortune as the owner of the Coca-Cola bottling plant in Mobile, Alabama, where he was the first to introduce Coke in individual bottles. Previously, Cokes were only available as soda fountain drinks. The Billingrouts passed on long ago, but their renowned gardens and mansion remain as an extraordinarily popular destination for events and weddings, along with garden visitors from nearby and around the world. Come along and join me for a conversation with Tom McGee. He's the retired museum director at the Gardens and Home Estate to discover the rest of the story. McGee's grandfather was Billingrout's personal physician, and he's the one who spurred the Coca-Cola executive to take a break from his grueling schedule to indulge in fishing and gardening at a Theodore, Alabama estate. Today, Billingrout Gardens and Home remain as one of the most charming and fascinating destinations in the Mobile, Alabama region.
I'm Tom McGee at Billingrout Gardens and Home near Mobile, Alabama.
What a fascinating under-the-radar surprise this place is. I bet there are a lot of people that don't know about it.
There probably are, and even on a daily basis I hear, how in the world did this ever get out here, since we are about 20 minutes from downtown Mobile, and folks just are amazed that all this beauty is out here. And you do go through some what are now industrial areas to get here. At one time it was all truck farms you drove through to get out here, to get to the waterfront. But in most waterfront areas, you often find that the prettiest side of the properties are facing the water, that you don't get that from the land side. So it is a nice surprise when you get in here and see all this beauty on the waterfront.
And this feels like a state park or a national park, is kind of a state-like grounds, but this was one couple, their private estate.
It was a garden estate, which was something that a lot of wealthy Americans were striving to create during the teens and 1920s in this country, and that's just what they did. They used an architect from Mobile to lay out all the pathways and water features and create this beautiful garden. People have been coming now since we opened in 1932.
They made their money through Coca-Cola bottling, right?
Mr. Billingrout was one of the first Coca-Cola bottlers. He got the first franchise from Mobile in 1903, and he married his secretary in 1906, so she married the boss.
Is there any insight into the history, into his early days? Did he have a clue how wildly successful he would be?
None at the very beginning. He was struggling. He and his brother bought a franchise from Montgomery, Alabama, in Mobile. They had to borrow the $1,500. They were in Montgomery at that point to raise the money, and every bank in Montgomery, Alabama turned them down. So they were not wealthy men. And he started out literally with a push cart in downtown Mobile, because his goal was to get people to try Coca-Cola in a bottle, whereas it had been something you'd normally gone to a drugstore and sat down and had served to you. He wanted you to take that bottle home with you.
I remember in the early days, I think it's Chattanooga, that everybody thought bottling would be a failure.
Well, Chattanooga was one of the early players. The other one was Vicksburg, Mississippi. And those men went to Asa Candler with the idea of bottling the product, and he basically shoot them out of the office at least two or three times. And finally, to get rid of these folks, he sold the rights, I believe it was $1, the rights to bottle Coca-Cola forever. And the joke was he never even got the dollar. And of course, that was in the late 1890s. It wasn't until the 1920s that bottling sales surpassed soda fountain sales and just kept right on through the roof.
It is fascinating. I think it was you that earlier today, you were talking about why things were okay for him during the Depression.
Well, the Depression hit Mobile like every place else, but across the country, Coca-Cola sales did just fine because it was always just a nickel. And people could afford a nickel product where they couldn't afford a new washing machine or a car or certainly a house, but they could struggle along and have that nickel Coca-Cola on a hot day.
And then you mentioned lipstick being another one that did just fine.
Yeah, the cosmetics industry survived because lipstick was relatively inexpensive, and a lady could change the color of lipstick and feel, you know, right. She couldn't buy a new dress, but she could change the color of her lipstick and feel a little bit better about herself.
And back to the family here, what was their full names, first and last?
Walter Duncan Billingrout, and then he married Bessie Morse. So we are run by the Billingrout Morse Foundation on both sides of the family.
What do you think was in their mind when they created and built this estate? There's something very understated about it. It's not like they were trying to show off.
No, they definitely weren't trying to show off. And that's why we've always called the Bellingrath home, even though it's 10,500 square feet, and even smaller houses would be calling themselves the mansion. And what most visitors say, it's a very livable size house, so it's very splendid. And it, again, it started out as a very rustic fishing camp, a couple of wooden cabins and that they dressed up a little bit. But they lived down here very comfortably in those cabins, and it wasn't until after the gardens opened to the public they decided they needed a grander house to live in and really retire in, with the idea that it was winterized, they could use it year-round and enjoy it. So they moved in 1936. It was started in 35 and finished by the middle of 1936.
When they moved in, what was the expanse of their garden grounds? How many acres did it cover?
It's close to what we have now, about 68 acres. And then as the years progressed, they bought property adjoining it, so, and across the river. So we now own close to 1,000 acres all total to protect it.
One of the unique things that I discovered today that I find fascinating, correct me if I'm wrong, but right out of the chute, they invited anybody basically from the community to come and walk around the gardens, I mean, right up to the front of their house. Mm-hmm. How unusual. Can you think of any other place like this?
No. The whole idea for this in Alabama stems from Charleston, and the idea that these gardens in Charleston, South Carolina, were opening to the public for the spring season. And that's what the Bellingrath were going to try to do for the Gulf Coast by having this azalea garden open in the springtime. And then the idea was, well, once the spring blooms are done, we'll have our estate back to ourselves for our family and friends coming. But the problem was they kept coming. All year long, people would drive down the driveway. So in 1935, they opened it year-round.
Isn't that just fascinating?
Well, what's really fascinating is when they first opened it to the public in 1932 to see if anyone was interested, they opened it right around the time of the terrible Lindbergh kidnapping, when most wealthy Americans were absolutely petrified. And there were other terrible kidnappings going on. It was a time of change and fear in this country. And most people with money were building walls, fences, hiring guards. And here the Bellingraths are, you know, pay a dollar, you come in and look at the gardens.
That's absolutely fascinating.
It is. And then when they built the house, people walked right past their open doors and windows 5-7 days a week, because it was open 7 days a week. And in those days, 365 days a year. Today, we're only closed on Christmas, New Year's, and Thanksgiving.
So going forward in their lives, as you said, they retired here. And he lived to what, the mid-50s?
He died in 1955. He was 86 years old. And he was running his company, the Coca-Cola Bottling Company, right to the end.
And you personally have a connection with the family through your family ancestry.
My grandfather, Paul McGee, was the family physician, and he was called on Mr. Bellingrath with some health issues back around 1918. Mr. Bellingrath was talking the whole time about this fishing camp he was pricing, and Mr. Bellingrath was probably very frugal, or for another term, cheap, and he thought it was too much money, and everybody had to listen on how he couldn't afford it. And my grandfather got tired of hearing it, and at the end of the exam said, you know, you need to buy that fishing camp and go learn how to play. So that's what he did in 1918.
Were you alive when your grandfather was alive? Did you remember?
No. Unfortunately, my grandfather died in 1945, so he died before Mr. Bellingrath. He was one of the few doctors left in Mobile, Alabama during World War II, and they literally were worked to death.
Wow, fascinating. And he was a GP then?
Yes.
Today, way in the background, there's an open lawn area, and there's a car show. So this is a real multi-use destination, isn't it? Tell us about the breadth of things that take place here.
We have all sorts of events all throughout the year, and then we have private events, weddings, and receptions here throughout the spring and summer. And then in the fall, we get into the Christmas season and have a Christmas light show. That's when we have our largest attendance, is the month of December. It starts the day after Thanksgiving, runs through New Year's Eve.
Backing up, I bet you that weddings are just incredibly popular here.
They are, and of course, the most beautiful one we ever had was Mr. Bellingrath's great niece got married here 22 years ago, and they took over the whole gardens for that one. And it was memorable because it was just family that came to that. And then they were from Little Rock, Arkansas, had Coca-Cola up there, and they had their reception with all their friends in Little Rock, but the main wedding took place here in the reception. So it was all the generation that had been children coming here in the summer, staying with their Uncle Walter, that remembered so much. So it meant a lot to multi-generations.
Are the gardens basically a best-kept secret that are held tightly by Mobilians. Majority of your visitors are local and regional.
Oh, no. I think like any property like this, the locals, they come out at Christmas for the children. But year-round, we have visitors from all over the world and all over the country that come.
So it's really driven your attendance by people from everywhere.
From everywhere.
How do they discover it? Is there myth and legend and lore that's spread around the world?
I think a lot of people have heard about it from friends that have been here before. I don't think a day goes by that we don't have somebody that said, my parents came through here on their honeymoon in 1955, or I had someone here the other day brought pictures from their parents in 1935 on their honeymoon here. So it seems like it's often been on the trek going across the Gulf Coast, since we're 2 hours from New Orleans on Interstate 10. So if you're going across east-west in this part of the country, you come right across it.
Interesting. Do you ever get bus tours that stop in here?
Oh, yes. We have bus tours all the time.
You kind of live in the past with them in a way, and you're very close. I bet you can almost feel them palpably in the house at times.
Our executive director mentioned that we're charged to maintain this property by Mr. Bellengrath in the trust agreement as a fitting memorial, permanent memorial to his wife. So he always gave her credit for success, so we try to maintain it as they maintained it. So I'm happy to report that we get daily comments on how well maintained this house is. And I've told guests before, I said, you don't pay good money to look at dust. It better be clean when you come to see us and looking top, because that's the way the Bellengrass kept it.
But do you ever have that sense that she's in the other room?
I've had guests say that they feel like they're right here. Mm-hmm. I guess I've been here so many years, I just take it for granted that they're here.
Interesting. And what are you most proud of? What is most touching to you? Why do you like coming here every day? And what do you like looking at?
My favorite thing about this house is the tours of the home, where we try to tell the stories about the Bellengrass. And if you don't get the aspect of who the Bellengrass were, what made them tick, the funny stories between them, how Mrs. Bellengrass was buying all these antiques and writing all the checks to cash to keep him in the dark. They were interesting people, and they had a lot of good times down here, and that's what we try to focus on. How they used the house, how they entertained here, what family came here, and what made them tick.
Were they pretty straight-laced, or was there a sense of humor, and did you hear any anecdotes?
I'll give you an example. Mrs. Bellengrass' favorite nephew had a little boy who was probably about 4 years old, and three or four, and he was at that age where you could say something to him and he'd repeat it back to you like a tape recorder. And he got into the kitchen with two of the male employees who put him up on the counter, and they were both saying things to him, all sorts of colorful expressions. And it got worse and worse and worse, and the little boy was listening and repeating it. And 2 days later, he was in the dining porch.
Thank you very much.
He was on the dining porch with his family, and there was a lull in the conversation, and out came all these four-letter words. All these four-letter words and phrases started coming out, and his poor mother almost fell out of her chair and said, "Where did you learn that?" And he grinned and said, "Bub," and that was his nickname for Edward Carl, who worked here. And Mr. Bellengrath popped up out of his chair, went running back there to tell the man that he would learn that language on his own soon enough and that they needed to cut that out. Mrs. Bellengrath, what is she doing? She's laughing. So you would think she'd be the one just horrified. Yeah. She thought the whole thing was funny.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. Anything else that you want to add? I know we're on tight time schedule, but
this property should appeal to anybody that likes gardens, anybody that likes beautiful antiques, and mainly that wants to know a great American story that they may not be aware of.
Tom McGee, thank you so much. What a pleasure.
You're welcome, Tom. It was a pleasure meeting you.
All right. And for further information, I know you've got to have a website.
Yes, bellengrath.org.
Thanks again, Tom.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Mobile, Alabama.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.